This is Movies for the Blind, episode 106, Three Blondes in His Life, part 2.
Silly boy, you're not serious. If I thought you were, I'd get angry.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with Three Blondes in His Life, which revolves around tough guy Private Eye Duke Wallace. And the guy playing him had a name just as manly, Jock Mahoney. His real name wasn't too far off, Jacques Mahoney, being of French, Irish, and Cherokee ancestry. At one time the stepfather of Sally Field, he could back up his He-Man name. Best known as a stuntman, he starred in two Western TV series, and after this movie, he would become the oldest man to play Tarzan at age 44. No one's gotten Duke Wallace into a loincloth yet, but not for lack of trying. Investigating the death of a colleague, Bill Collins, who had a penchant for blonde women, he's sorting through the motivations of the three of them in the title. Collins' widow, Lois, who went blonde trying to keep her man, Martha Carr, who knew Collins before she got married but might have engineered a fake robbery with him for insurance money, and Helen Fortner, the recent widow of a very rich man twice her age. We met Helen at the end of the last episode, where she was very friendly with Duke. All the blondes will be getting even friendlier with him, but let's check in with his investigation first. There is an investigation going on in the conclusion of Three Blondes in His Life. Later.
It takes an olive and a twist of lemon to make a good martini. But it'll only take one good clue to put me on the trail of Collins' murderer.
At Club Casa, a bartender runs a knife around the inside of a lemon, then cuts partway through the center lengthwise to remove the peel and pith. With another man.
You're sure the Fortners never came in here with anyone else?
They were good customers. And I'd remember if there was anything different or out of line.
I told you the same as I told the other detective. Fortners always left together. Even when he got pretty well oiled, he always seemed to be able to get home. And she always left with him.
Duke sets down his drink.
Thank you for the information.
Then tips the bartender and leaves. Later. He pulls up to the Fortner home on a sunny day. Getting out of the car, he steps around it and approaches the home. He rings the doorbell and straightens his jacket. The butler opens the door.
Mrs. Fortner is expecting.
He steps inside and the butler closes the door.
This way, sir.
The butler leads Duke across the living room to another door, which he opens to reveal Helen sitting up on a bed. Duke enters and starts to close the door.
Mrs. Fortner was expecting me.
With a wink, he closes it and turns to Helen.
Sit down.
He gets a chair beside the bed.
Helen, you remember Bill Collins?
Oh, yes. That nice man I met after the accident. A detective of some sort. He was so sympathetic.
He's been murdered.
Oh, what a shame.
She leans in to kiss him.
Remember me, Duke Wallace, Insurance Investigations. I'd like to talk to you about the accident that killed your husband.
She leans back, annoyed.
I wanted to drive and he wouldn't let me. He was drunk, and I wouldn't ride with him.
You'd been drinking.
Oh, yes, but I could have driven.
Your husband usually drink a lot?
Duke, I'm not a child. I understand that you have to ask questions. And I'm trying to help you. But don't treat me as a child.
I'm sorry.
It's all right, dear.
She leans in again.
Is that all?
I'd like to know where you were Tuesday night. The ninth.
He sits at her feet on the bed.
I don't know, dear.
Well, you can remember. Try. Think.
I'll try. When was the ninth?
About a week ago.
Is it terribly important?
Terribly.
I'll try. Oh, dear. I just can't remember. Why don't we ask Louis?
Who's Louis?
My butler. I'm sure he would know. I'll get dressed and we'll ask.
All right.
He gets up and leaves her on the bed in her black negligee. Stepping to another door, he opens it to find Louis in the kitchen.
Louis?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me where Mrs. Fortner was on the night of the 9th?
I'm afraid I can't discuss Mrs. Fortner with you, sir.
You can and you will. In the first place, there's a murder involved. In the second place, if you don't talk to me, you'll talk to the police. Besides, Mrs. Fortner told me to ask you.
Very well, sir.
Lewis goes to a drawer and opens it, taking out a book. He leafs through it.
Mrs. Fortner dined at home that night. We served roast duck, sweet potatoes.
She alone?
Yes, sir.
You're sure?
Certain. She dined alone. She complained that the duck was too greasy and that the French dressing was too tart. Would you care to check?
He holds out the book to Duke, who accepts it and reads.
You keep a schedule like this on every meal?
Yes, sir. My wife's system. She cooks. This way we can assure variety and correct any errors.
What about the rest of the evening?
I really couldn't say, sir. Mrs. Lewis and I retired to our apartment as soon as we finished the dishes.
What time did you retire?
If dinner was served at 6:30, we were no doubt in our apartment by 8.
It's not in the book.
No, sir, but I don't remember anything unusual about the evening, and that would be our routine.
Mrs. Fortner go out?
Our apartment's on the far side, sir. I wouldn't know.
Lewis, you're going to talk. Not to me, maybe, but to the police. They may have to drag you all the way to San Bernardino, but you're going to talk.
I assure you, sir, I have nothing to talk about. Mrs. Lewis and I retired about 8, unless there's a party and we are needed. We serve breakfast at 9 in the morning, and during our off periods, we are in complete ignorance of what happens here.
He returns the book.
Well, on your on period, do you often admit men to Mrs. Fortner's bedroom?
I can remember of no other occasion, sir.
Well, there you are, darling.
Helen enters.
Been looking for you. Did Lewis tell you everything you wanted to know?
Duke heads for the front door.
Oh, that's too bad. Aren't you coming back for dinner?
Oh, I have other appointments.
Oh.
She takes his shoulders.
You'll come back after your appointments, won't you? You will, won't you, dear?
They kiss, and he holds her. They part.
All right. See you at 7.
He continues on to the front door, gingerly wiping his lips, and walks out.
Lewis. Mr. Wallace will be back. Serve at 7.
Soon after, Duke pulls up outside Martha Carr's house. He gets out of the car and again approaches the well-appointed front yard. Straightening his jacket, he steps to the door and rings the bell. In a fitted blouse and skirt, Martha answers.
You.
What did you expect, Santa Claus?
He enters.
Did you come back for a drink?
No, but it's a good idea.
They walk around the sofa.
Tell me about singing in San Francisco and dating Bill Collins.
You're determined to be unpleasant. Why?
I'm determined to get some truth into our little conversation.
They sit across from each other.
Bill Collins was murdered. And while I personally don't give a hoot, it reflects on the agency, and they're going to pin it on someone. In my book, you fit the part.
And because I knew him in San Francisco, you'll frame me?
No. Because you and he rigged a robbery, and he wasn't satisfied with his $6,000.
$6,000?
Smirking, he leans back on the sofa.
He chiseled you.
Look, Duke, you know I knew Collins in San Francisco. My husband knew I wasn't Sweet 16. And he knew about my friendship with Bill.
The robbery.
You're too persistent. How does your supposed robbery connect me with the murder?
You needed money. A sizable amount of money without your husband knowing about it. Probably gambling losses, the horses, the racing form that I saw you with. So you found Collins, or he just happened along, and the two of you arranged a robbery. He cheated you, you pulled it off, and he covered it by investigating.
And by chance he was assigned to this case?
No. We used 5 full-time investigators. And Collins knew how to pick a time when the other 4 would have assignments and he'd be free. He knew he'd get the case. There wasn't a chance of him missing it.
Well, go on.
Well, about a month later, he put the bite on you for more money and you paid.
Why would I pay?
So he wouldn't tell your husband.
Well, he'd expose himself, wouldn't he?
Only to your husband. And Mr. Carr wouldn't let you go to jail. He'd give you hell, probably, but that wouldn't bother you half as much as the fact that he'd had a hold on you. Something to control you with.
She looks away.
Am I boring you?
No. Go on with your pipe dreams.
When Collins put the second bite on you, you paid, but you put a stop to it by luring him up to Lakeview and shooting him.
She looks at him and smiles. Getting up from her chair, she steps to the sofa and sits beside him.
You don't believe I killed him.
I...
She puts a hand over his mouth. then removes it to kiss him gently.
No. Where did I get the money?
Somebody smart took Collins to Lakeview. You're smart.
If I paid him, I must have had money. And if I had money, I didn't need the robbery I was paying him to keep quiet about.
We'll keep digging.
He gets up and steps behind the sofa. Then turns back.
We'll keep checking the pawn shops. Maybe we'll come up with the answer to your question.
As he leaves, she gets more agitated, grabbing a pillow. She throws it. That night at Helen's.
Thank you, Louis. That'll be over.
Thank you, madam. Good night. Good night, sir.
Louis leaves Duke with coffee in a chair across from Helen, who lounges on a sofa.
Sit over here.
Oh, this is fine. Just comfortable.
Something wrong, dear?
He sets his coffee aside.
Helen, will you do me a favor?
Yes, what is it?
Will you lend me some money?
How much?
Oh, about 2,000.
Silly boy, you're not serious. If I thought you were, I'd get angry.
No, I'm not serious.
I didn't think so. You shouldn't joke like that.
She stands.
I guess I better go and change into something comfortable.
In her black cocktail dress, she steps to her bedroom door and goes inside. Duke gets up and hurries to the kitchen, where he looks around. He crosses to a door and peers through the curtains of its window. Crossing back to the drawer where Louis had gotten the book, he opens it, takes out the book, and looks through it.
Potatoes not so hot. Dressing good. Milk for Madame and coffee for Wallace.
Grinning with a shrug, he puts the book back in the drawer, then looks toward the door he'd peered through. He steps to a counter, picks up the lid of a pot, and intentionally drops it. Getting no reaction, he picks it up and puts it back. He leaves the kitchen as Helen walks out in a white gauzy negligee.
What happened?
I dropped a pan.
They gaze at each other. And he kisses her passionately. They part. And she kisses him just as passionately. He eases her away.
See you later.
Where are you going?
Well, I've got lots of work to do.
Now?
Yeah. I'll see you later.
She follows him to the front door.
Later tonight?
And holds him from behind.
It's later.
Tonight.
Some other time.
He leaves. She throws up her arms a little and turns away. Later, in his office, Kelly eats an apple at his desk. With coffee, Duke sits across from him.
What did you hear from the San Bernardino police?
They like the suicide angle. Did you think of it, Duke?
For a minute.
It sounds too easy.
Prince?
Plenty of Collins. The rest of them were smears. Now, the slug came from the gun, and it was his gun.
Time of death?
Sometime Wednesday morning. Just a guess, though. He was pretty drunk.
Passed out.
I said he was drunk.
Okay.
A man enters the bullpen from outside.
You don't like the suicide angle, huh?
No, there was somebody with him.
Well, if he was expecting somebody up there, especially a dame, he might have bought the groceries. You know, stuff she told him to pick up. As long as she didn't show, he probably sat around getting loaded, feeling sorry for himself.
The man steps in from the bullpen.
What'd you get from Collins' wife, Benny?
She'd been told by the time I saw her. She cried a little, but she did again when she saw the body. She was all over it when we got back.
Mm-hmm. Did you get anything out of her at all?
She hasn't got an alibi. She was home all alone on Tuesday night from about 9 o'clock on.
Give her his last week's check. We'll take care of the funeral.
Oh, isn't that sweet? The whole thing gets me right here. You're so generous, Duke.
Yeah, it's only money. What about Martha Carr?
Mrs. Carr had dinner at the Encore, all right.
He checks his notes.
We got a waiter who remembered her because she paid with the 10 spot and forgot to pick up her change.
Is that all?
Right now, yeah.
Good.
Benny takes an apple from the desk.
Why don't you have an apple?
Thanks, I already got one.
He walks out.
Smart aleck. Any more reports from you?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that Collins had 10 grand stashed in the bank.
Well, I wondered when you'd get around to checking that.
Now, his first deposit was 6 grand. That was 3 days after the car robbery. On the 29th of last month, he deposited 3 more thousand, and then on the 3rd of this month, another grand.
Good, now we're rolling. What else?
What about the report to Rogers? You didn't call him.
Let him wait. I got a more important call to make.
He dials Kelly's phone. Later, a woman in a satiny dress plays a grand piano in a restaurant. It's an elegant steakhouse with paintings of horses on the wall, wooden chairs, and gingham tablecloths. Duke arrives in the foyer with Lois. The maitre d' leads them down some stairs to the main dining room and pulls out a table to allow them to sit down on the curved leather bench around it. When they do, he pushes the table in, gives the menus, and steps away.
I think you're very brave. I know how you feel.
In a way, I'm glad it's all over.
She takes off white gloves.
Yes, well, we'll still have to bury the poor guy.
But how? I don't have any money.
Didn't Bill leave you anything?
Memories of blondes and about enough money to last a week.
Would you care to order dinner now, sir?
We'll have dinner later. Would you like a drink?
Oh, I'll just have coffee.
The waiter nods.
Maybe you should have a drink. Make you feel better.
Bourbon and water.
Make it two, please.
Two bourbons and water? Pretty good, sir.
He steps away.
How are you going to get along?
Oh, Charlie will probably help me.
Charlie? Charlie who?
Oh, Charlie Walsh. Well, he's Bill's best friend. And he made Bill a promise a long time ago that he'd always be around just in case. You know, he just moved into the room above me. I'm sure he'll think of something.
Oh, I'm sure he will. Well, don't worry about the funeral. We'll pick up the expenses.
Oh, Duke, thank you.
She holds his arm, then releases it.
Are you sure that Bill didn't have some money in a bank somewhere?
Bill and banks never seem to get together.
Oh.
What's wrong, Duke?
Well, I thought you'd level with me about Bill's bank accounts. I know he had money hidden somewhere. You sure he never talked about it?
What are you talking about? Bill didn't have any money. Well, all he ever gave me was just pin money. I had to scheme to get money for clothes.
Well, I guess I might as well tell you. He had several bank accounts.
Bill?
$10,000, but I'm afraid you won't be able to use it.
She touches his arm, then his cheek.
So what? Money isn't everything.
She kisses him, and he holds her arm. Later at the office, Duke polishes an apple while reading a file in Kelly's chair. Kelly paces with another file.
Now, this is only a stab in the dark, but let's say, for instance,
Betty and Benny work in the bullpen.
Let's say that Walt and the Fortner dame knocked her husband off.
All right.
Okay. Now, Collins found out about it, found out how it was done, and then decided to cut himself in on the deal.
All right, go ahead.
Go ahead where? Ain't that enough?
Yeah, that's enough.
He throws the apple to him.
That is, if we can connect Charlie and Helen. The bar contact might be enough.
Betty enters with a coffee tray.
She's the type that goes a long way on a casual acquaintance. Now, say that somebody told her they'd get her husband out of the picture without involving her. She might go along with it. I don't think she's got enough nerve to kill a man herself, but she might help. Charlie follows Fortner home. Fortner gets out of the car, goes into the house. Charlie saps him, dumps him into the car, heads it for the cliff.
Forget it.
What's the matter?
You didn't see the medical report. Fortner didn't get sapped. He had no head injuries at all. Had a broken arm.
You're a big help. You make it real tough. You got an idea how it happened?
No, that's one of the weak spots.
Yes, well, there's another weak spot, too.
Only one thing bothers me, that mountain trip.
Well, Collins could have told either one of the blondes about the cabin. Listen, for Martha, the timing would have been absolutely perfect. Her husband was going out of town. That would have left her free to spend a couple of days at Lakeview. Now, with Helen, she'd go anywhere, anytime that anybody asked her to.
The cabin is what bothers me. There's something wrong with it.
You got a hunch?
Maybe. Anyway, we can't do anything about either one of the two blondes until we find out if the Fortner case was kosher. Now, if it wasn't, Helen has got a motive. But the whole thing hinges on the accident and what Collins found out.
Well, listen, if he'd have found anything, we'd have found it out too, wouldn't we?
Well, that's what I said, remember?
Yeah, that's probably where I heard it.
Benny enters with a file.
I just got a hot flash from the airport. Henry Carr didn't leave that Tuesday night. He left on the noon flight next day.
You're fired. Why don't you get lost?
We don't need another suspect.
Duke grabs the phone and makes a call.
Hello, Martha. Duke Wallace. The night you took your husband to the airport, did you see him get on the plane?
Well, I did what I always do. I left him at the airport. The plane was leaving in 10 minutes or so I didn't park. Why do you ask?
Routine?
He got back this morning. You can see him at his office.
Talk to you later.
He hangs up and stands, heading for the door.
Where are you going?
See Mr. Carr.
Meanwhile, Martha slowly hangs up, concerned. Soon after, at the offices of Carr and Davies shipping agents.
Yes?
My name is Duke Wallace, insurance investigator. I'd like to talk to Mr. Carr.
The secretary pushes the intercom.
I'm Mr. Wallace to see you, Mr. Carr.
Send him in.
Won't you go in, please?
He goes into the office and closes the door.
Mr. Carr?
Yes. Won't you sit down?
He doesn't.
Did you know that Bill Collins was murdered?
Yes, I do. I don't see what possible connection I could have with the murder, Mr.
Wallace. Well, the possible connection is the fact that you didn't leave for New York on the plane when your wife took you to the airport.
Well, I...
That night a man was murdered. And the man who was murdered knew your wife.
What are you trying to get at?
Well, the thing that I'm trying to get at is the fact that your wife knew the man that was murdered. As a matter of fact, she knew him before she married you. They were very friendly in San Francisco when she was seeing up there.
Well, I knew she had friends up there, of course, but I didn't know any of them. I don't even remember her saying that she'd known Collins before.
Where were you the night that you were supposed to be on the plane to New York?
That's none of your business.
He gets up.
Well, it is my business. You didn't leave on the plane for New York the night that your wife took you to the airport. Maybe you found out that she was going to take a little trip with an old friend. And maybe you followed her.
Carr punches him. Duke responds with a punch in the gut, then the chin, knocking Carr onto a chair. The secretary rushes in, then bends down to Carr.
Darling, what did he do to you? Are you all right, sweetheart? Are you all right?
Oh, well, now I know where your Mr. Carr was the night he was supposed to be on the airplane.
Duke smiles and heads out, but the secretary follows.
What did you do to him?
I'll bet it wasn't the first time he wasn't where he was supposed to be. See you sometime.
Get out of here!
He leaves and she goes back to Carr.
Oh, your poor head. Poor head.
At night, Duke drives up to Lois's apartment building and parks. He gets out of the car, then steps around it and past the stairs to the second story, and knocks on Lois's door. Going to answer it, she glances toward the couch, then unlocks the door and opens it just a crack. Duke opens it more.
Lois, I've got to ask you some questions.
He takes her arm and they turn to the couch, where a man sits.
Well, I hope I didn't interrupt anything.
He sits.
Who's this?
He's from Bill's investigating agency.
Who's that?
The man stands.
Charlie
Walsh. Live here? I got a room upstairs. Cozy. You trying to make something out of it?
Charlie, please.
Lois, when was the last time you saw your husband?
Tuesday night. He left here at 8:30.
Why?
He said he had to go.
No, I mean, why do you answer every time I ask her a question?
I was here when Bill left. That's why.
Ah.
Charlie sits in a chair.
Stay all night? Now,
Charlie,
wait a minute, bud.
How else would you have known whether he came home that night or not?
Lois sits.
Lois told me. See?
I want her to tell me. See?
He didn't come home.
You know, I should have brought a lunch. That is, if it takes as long to get the answers to the rest of my questions.
Charlie stands.
Wise guy, hmm?
So does Lois.
How do you make him crawl back in the woodwork?
Charlie, you better go, please.
Ought to punch him in the nose.
But he goes to the door and walks out. Looking down at Duke, she saunters to the couch.
You know...
And sits beside him.
You should be a lot nicer to him.
Why?
Because he could make a very bad enemy.
Know anyone who wouldn't?
She moves closer to him, and they kiss passionately. Next day at his office, Kelly looks up from his desk.
Well, I'm glad you could make it.
He smirks at Duke as he closes the door.
I damn near didn't. What's new?
Nothing. Just this.
He hands Duke a file.
The report on Lois Collins you asked me for. I found out that Lois Collins is playing house with Charlie the bartender.
That I know.
He sits reading.
Here's a list of the bars where Charlie's been tending bar. The last one was a joint called the Bandwagon. He was fired last month. Now, those two blondes came in there frequently, and they knew Charlie, at least well enough to call him by his first name.
Go on.
But you know, there's a funny thing. Charlie's got a Hollywood apartment he's still paying rent on.
You mean besides the room at Collins?
That's right. He rented the room around the 28th of last month.
What'd you get on the apartment?
Nothing. It's the kind of a place where nobody knows anything about anybody. Although the guy across the hall did admit he heard girlish laughter from Charlie's apartment from time to time.
Charlie fits in there somewhere.
With which blonde?
I don't know. I got a hunch.
He gets up.
See you later.
Well, keep in touch, will you?
At one of the bars.
I remember talking to the private eye. Asking if Mrs. Fortner...
The bartender looks up.
...refused to ride with the old man when he was stiff. I told him I didn't know of any time she refused to ride with her husband. He was stubborn. He wouldn't let anyone get him a cab. He always drove, and she always rode with him.
Charlie Walsh was working here when the other investigator was here?
Yeah. You fired him? Look, I ain't making any charges against Charlie. He was popular with the dames, but I let him go. I make just as much dough. There's a lot less liquor going now. I still don't say he stole from me. I just got rid of him. He didn't seem to mind.
At another bar.
Nah. Nothing ever really wrong with Fortner except he didn't seem to pay enough attention to the missus. He can get riled now and then and put in a few extra rounds with some strangers, but she always left with him.
I used to have a drink with her myself once in a while. Nice lady. Nothing ever out of line, just talk. But he sort of got sore about it one night, though, and he cut things short and left in a huff, but she went with him.
Charlie used to work here.
Yeah.
Well, after he left, did he ever come in with the Fortners?
Nah. I know Charlie. He'd come in and talk to them when they happened to be here, but he never came in with them or anything like that. Charlie always used to give his friends matches with his address written on the inside.
The bartender gives him one of them. It looks exactly like the one found at the cabin. Duke puts it down and gets up from his stool.
Thanks a lot.
He tips the bartender.
Been a big help.
Thank you.
Then he leaves. Later, Duke drives down a city street. He parks in front of an old apartment building. He gets out of the car. He heads for the steps leading to the front doors. He goes inside and checks the names on the mailboxes, finding Charlie Walsh, apartment 4. He walks away from the mailboxes, then turns down a hall toward the stairs. He goes up them to an apartment door at the top. It's apartment 4, so Duke knocks. He goes to knock again, but Charlie opens it first.
I want to talk to you. What about? Mrs. Fortner.
Charlie kicks him down the stairs. Duke lands at the bottom face down, giving his head a good shake. painfully drags the rest of his body to the floor and sits up, recovering.
Ooh, that Charlie's a nice guy.
He leaves, holding his gut.
I thought he was tied into this deal the first time I saw him playing footsie with Lois.
He gets in the car.
Now I know he is. Why else would he be so nervous?
He pulls out a cigarette.
Well, what have you got besides a sore stomach? Only that Charlie knows all three blondes, and all three blondes know Charlie.
He lights up and smokes.
He and Collins must have had something that was worth money. Maybe some Collins report.
Glancing behind him for oncoming traffic, Duke releases his brake and drives away. He meets Betty at the office.
Did you find him?
He's waiting for you now.
Thank you.
He steps into Kelly.
Where was Collins the night of the Fortner accident?
He was waiting in a bullpen. The record shows that.
What, at night?
That's right. Me, Ted Black, and Collins.
Well, it begins to add up. Yes, Collins' report was fine, except for one omission. An omission a good detective wouldn't make. Helen Fortner had never refused to ride with her husband before. Even at times when he was drunker than the night of the accident. And that's the important point that is not in the report. And for a good reason. And then there's Charlie. Charlie figures all the way down the line in this somehow. Because he was around when Collins was checking.
Where do we go from here?
I'm going to see Mrs. Fortner again.
Duke walks out. And soon after, Lewis answers the front door.
Good evening, Lewis.
Duke steps inside.
Mrs. Fortner's not at home, sir.
I'd like to see your book.
My book?
Revenge's.
Yes, sir.
Lewis leads him to the kitchen. Getting the book from the drawer, he hands it to Duke, who goes through it.
No coffee?
Not for Mrs. Fortner. Mrs. Fortner doesn't drink coffee.
No, I didn't think so. Did you hear me banging the pans around in here last night?
No, sir.
He returns the book.
I'll wait for Mrs. Fortner.
As Duke walks through the living room, he takes out a cigarette and puts it in his mouth. Picking up a matchbook from a coffee table, he sits on the sofa and notices he's holding one of the matchbooks. He sniffs it like he did at the cabin, then takes a match from it to light a cigarette. Lewis goes to answer the door, and Helen steps inside.
Thank you.
She gives Lewis her coat.
Where?
And spots Duke.
Serve some drinks, Lewis.
She approaches him as he stands.
I was most anxious to talk to you. I was going to call you.
They kiss. While Lewis makes drinks at the bar, they keep kissing.
Are you going to have dinner with me tonight, darling?
No, I thought I'd take you out.
Oh, in that case, Lewis, no dinner, and I won't be needing you for the rest of the evening. I was so anxious to talk to you.
What about?
They kiss again. Lewis brings out the drinks. And when they part, Helen looks intently at Duke.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Excuse me.
As Lewis retreats into the kitchen, Helen crosses the living room to the bedroom. Duke sits back down on the sofa and picks up the matchbook.
Helen, you're in danger.
Through the open door.
Don't be silly, darling.
She undresses.
I enjoy danger.
Better grow up. I'm talking about the police. They're bound to catch up with you sooner or later.
I haven't done anything. You're not being very nice.
In her bra and panties, she opens her closet and takes out the white negligee.
I think you better tell me exactly what happened to your husband and Bill Collins, all of it.
Oh, I haven't done anything. My husband had an accident.
She pulls it on.
What about Charlie?
The bartender?
That's right.
She finishes dressing in the negligee, then crosses the bedroom and stands in the doorway.
He was a nice boy, but I haven't seen him since he left that bar.
He holds up the matchbook.
Where did you get these?
She approaches him.
Oh, those. They're Charlie's. He gives those to all of his friends.
You're just not going to tell me the truth, are you?
I told you the truth.
Caressing his chin, she picks up one of the drinks and takes it to another sofa in front of a window.
I wasn't very nice to you last night.
I thought you were.
No.
She sits down.
You wanted some money and I didn't give it to you.
Duke smiles and leans forward toward her.
How much do you need, darling?
Helen, did you give Bill Collins money?
Oh, yes, he needed it too. He was so nice to me. He asked me to go away with him for the weekend in a cab.
He smokes, then drops the cigarette in an ashtray.
Should go?
He gets up.
No, Charlie wouldn't let me. Let's forget it.
When he steps over to her, she sets down her drink. He sits with her and envelops her in a passionate embrace. Later, he speeds around a corner of Lois's apartment building. He parks. He gets out of the car and walks around it toward Lois's door. Lois approaches from the other side and talks through it.
Charlie?
Duke.
She cracks it open to check, then undoes the door chain to let him in. She leaves the door open.
You're expecting Charlie?
No, of course not. But I don't know anyone else who'd be coming here at this hour. Detectives are checking on me.
Routine.
Well, I don't like it.
She runs her hands over his chest.
Charlie says they're not police. He says they're private detectives like you are.
Charlie's smart. What are you doing up so late?
I couldn't sleep. I was lonesome.
You are expecting Charlie?
I told you I wasn't.
Is he in?
I don't know. I didn't see his car out front.
Where does he live?
Upstairs, room 16. Don't go. Stay and talk to me.
Talk?
Stay.
Be right back.
I'll be waiting.
He steps away from her and out the door. He looks up the stairs to the second story, then climbs them. Walking along the outside landing, he finds room 16. Inside, Charlie steps to the door.
Yes?
Open the door.
He cracks it.
Who is it?
Duke Wallace, I want to talk to you.
Hello, peeper.
He closes it and walks off. Duke bursts in and tackles him over a chair. When they get to their feet, Charlie slugs Duke, who falls against a drawer and down. Well, Charlie pounces on him and pulls him up to slug him again. Duke falls over a bookshelf, and Charlie lunges for him again, but Duke kicks him off. He pulls Charlie off the drawer and punches him. Meanwhile, Lois steps out of her apartment and looks up. She hurries up the stairs as the fight continues. At the landing, she runs to Charlie's apartment and finds Duke punching him, landing on his couch. Charlie springs back up and shoves Duke onto the bed, smashing a lamp. Lois hurries back down the stairs. Going back into her apartment, she runs to the phone and makes a call.
Operator, get me the police.
Upstairs, Duke slugs Charlie, who flips him over the bed. Duke grabs one side of it and lifts it up to trap Charlie against a wall, breaking a window. Charlie scrambles over the bed and Duke helps drag him over so he can pull him up and knock him down again. Duke jumps on him and pulls him up and slugs him across the room. Meanwhile, a police car races for the scene. It makes a turn. While at the apartment, neighbors step into the doorway and watch Duke bend down to Charlie and get kicked. Lois returns. Duke kicks Charlie in the face, sending him across the room. As the police car gets closer, Duke looks down at Charlie slumped against a wall, barely conscious. Then he staggers to the couch, and as he sits down, Lois rushes to him.
All right, folks, let's through here. Come on, stand back. Let us through.
The police enter, and Duke gestures toward Charlie.
Book him.
All right.
An officer goes to Charlie and bends down.
I want a doctor.
Then undoes his belt as another officer turns to Duke.
Who are you? Duke Wallace, international insurance investigator.
He gives him his card.
Book him. What's the charge? Suspicion of murder. Any accomplices? I'll come down and prefer charges.
Two paramedics arrive.
He's all right.
They go from Duke to Charlie, badly bruised and still groggy.
You got a Band-Aid?
In my apartment.
Let's go get it.
Duke and Lois get up with an arm around each other and walk out. Later at the office...
Helen first met Charlie in the bandwagon. She wanted to get rid of her husband. Charlie wanted to make it permanent. Helen put a Mickey in her husband's drink and then refused to ride with him. He got sick and passed out near the end of the dead-end street.
Betty reads her notes.
Charlie, who had been following in his own car, pushed Fortner's car over the cliff. He told Helen later how it was accomplished.
All right, type it up and check my reservation for New York, will
you? I'll do it right away.
As Betty leaves, Kelly eats an apple.
You know, the thing that bugs me is why did Helen squeal on Charlie?
Well, she didn't mean to.
Kelly looks at Duke and smiles. He answers the intercom.
There's a Mrs. Adams here to see Mr. Wallace.
Send her in. Got company.
A well-dressed blonde walks in with a poodle.
Sit, Adam. Sit prettily. Sit, Adam.
Duke stands.
Duke Wallace?
Yes, ma'am?
I need your help. My husband disappeared several days ago. You were recommended to me, very highly, by Helen Fortner.
Duke turns to Kelly, who looks away.
Where'd you say you live?
I'll take you.
Duke steps aside for her to lead him out, then turns to Kelly again.
I know. Don't call me, I'll call you.
He leaves Kelly's office. The end. Described for Movies for the Blind. And that was Three Blondes in His Life. When I described Helen Fortner as buxom initially, I wasn't kidding around. The woman playing her, Greta Thiessen, was a former Miss Denmark who served as a body double for Marilyn Monroe. We now leave the era before Women's Lib for our next movie. For the first time in this podcast, we are going to have something made after 1963, in color, though I'm not sure if it'll sound that way, and for the Christmas season.
Are you married or still one of us girls?
No, I'm divorced. I got the papers this week.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Don't be. I'm beginning to enjoy being on my own again.
And now I would like to introduce you to your new choir master, Mr. Ephraim Adams.
Your minister has said that he does not expect miracles. I do. I fully intend to make something out of the cacophony I heard last Sunday. We will give a special Christmas performance. Handel's Messiah. I have chosen Handel's Messiah precisely because it is difficult and worthy of the effort we intend to make.
Are you coming home for Thanksgiving?
I can't afford to, you know that.
Oh. Still at the same office?
I wish. I'm in the third office this week. Choir makes up for it, though.
And the glory, the glory of the Lord.
That's A Christmas Without Snow, next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. Also, check out the new Movies for the Blind page on Facebook with exclusive previews and video links. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. And the movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.